our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. I tell you what, I had really high hopes meeting both of you at Tout Wars this weekend, and I was quickly disappointed.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
And I was ecstatic, and I ran around our apartment in Harlem screaming like a little girl.
Yeah, butt naked too, which made me immediately go to the room, shut the door.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I mean, it legitimately felt like it was about 45 degrees in the room, and then the air conditioner that seemed to be running the entire time.
It was running. It was running. I mean, we were right under it.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 243 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode, a special episode, is Eli Rosenzweig and Mike Warner. Eli, how you doing?
And I saw you guys all last weekend. Now I got to talk to you. This is too much.
I know. I just spent 4 days with you assholes, or well, 3 days mostly with you, four with Mike. And now the next day we're back together again, bullshitting about spending the last 3 or 4 days together.
After this podcast, I need like a week break from you. I hope that's okay.
You got till Friday, buddy. Mike, how are you?
I tell you what, I had really high hopes meeting both of you at Tout Wars this weekend, and I was quickly disappointed especially when I met you, Justin. It was like just a plummet down in disappointment. I was really, really sad, but no, I mean, in all seriousness, it was an awesome, awesome time. I will remember it forever. Not only just me and you guys, which was half the fun in itself, because as close as we are, we've never met each other person like just face to face. So it was really nice to actually be able to have that time and such. And then on top of that, I'm sure we'll get into it, just the whole entire Tout Wars weekend and what that, you know, meant to us. And, you know, just to be there and witness all the drafts was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, let's see. Mike, I've known you for about 2.5 years. We've been doing this podcast together for the majority of that time. I think almost exactly 2 years since you joined Friends Fantasy Benefits. And Eli and I have known each other for feels like 3 or 4 years. And none of us had ever met in person. So, you know, we do this remotely via Skype and the internet because we live in different parts of the country. So it was pretty amazing to meet you guys. But, I mean, even more amazing to meet a ton of fantasy analysts. You know, for those who are new to us, what we did was we decided, in spite of the fact that we were not necessarily, quote-unquote, invited to Tout Wars, we were going to just crash the party. And in doing that, we were asked, because I've got a relationship with Laura Michaels of Masters Ball, and we met Peter Kreutzer and Ron Chandler and Jeff Erickson, who all put on the Tout Wars events together, they asked us to run the social media. So we did all the tweeting, the Facebook Live videos, and on the Tout Wars Facebook page all weekend long, with help from Ben Brennis and Andy Anderson, who were very invaluable throughout that. And it was just a blast. And we're going to talk about our Tout Wars weekend today. Because there were some interesting things that happened, but before we do that, I just want to ask, who is your favorite person other than me at Tout Wars? Like, who did you come away from like being like, man, that was a super cool person? Eli.
Paul Spohr. I mean, he's always been one of my favorite.
Oh, please suck up more and more. Jeez.
I barely even got to talk to him. It's just like, but I don't know. Like, I always liked him as an analyst. I think he's funny. He's kind of like a snarky guy, and that's kind of my personality. So I just think he was fun to be around. We'll get into his drafts later. Just got to draft with him. That was a lot of fun. So yeah, I think Paul Spohr was awesome.
Mike,
there's a lot of really awesome people.
I mean, you could name his, you know, I mean, if we wanted to, we could do 5 minutes on each person that was there. Because, you know, the honest truth of it is, and, like, I don't think it gets said enough, is, you know, you hear these people on their shows or read their work, on their websites or whatever site they work for. And, you know, for the most part, they seem like really cool people. And it all of that undersells the amazing people that are in this industry. I mean, I you know, someone jokingly asked me, all right, who's been the asshole to you this weekend? And I honestly said, like, there, every single person I met, from Peter Kreutzer to Andrew Lamont to Jake Seeley to Tristan Cockcroft, were the nicest people in the world.
Yeah,
Jason
Collette
was incredibly nice.
Yeah, mm-hmm. not one analyst that we met, easily they could have been like, oh, who are these guys, and just like walked away. They could have been hey, how's it going?
Mike Podhorzer did that to me.
Well, that's because he didn't know who you were at first. Until he figured out that your name was actually Justin Mason, I think he kind of changed his tune. But no, it's not set enough, because once you actually meet these people, they are just so kind and generous. And kind of piggybacking into your question, you could obviously say Spore and Collette, and everybody kind of knows them. You know, their personality on their show is exactly how they are in real life. They are completely hilarious, very, very fun individuals. Can't say enough about them. But the two that, like, were really, really cool, I mean, I guess I could say Podhorzer too, because Podhorzer was just, I mean, I talked to him for a lot of the time that I was there. But Tim Heaney was absolutely awesome. He was one of the first guys I met, and he by himself just kind of took me around and introduced me to a lot of people, and just was really kind and generous. And he's just an amazing guy. And also Vlad Sedler. I don't think he is as well known at least in our community, as, because he's more of an NFBC guy and he doesn't really do a consistent podcast or anything like that. But Vlad Sedler, one of the nicest people ever, just a really kind guy, and just is really smart too. If you don't know that already, he's an absolutely brilliant fantasy player. He's going to go a long, long way. But I mean, you could go, the list goes. Joe Pizzapia was amazing with us. I mean, he's always been awesome with us on our show, and just being somebody that promotes us and has us on his shows. I mean, it was just awesome. But in general, I think those were a couple of the guys that stand out.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I could go through this whole thing and or the whole list of people and really talk about how each part. I mean, Andrew Lamont gave me gummy bears, like, you know,
which you don't need. So actually,
yeah, no, which I don't need. You should probably try to throw me off my game. You know, Jake Seeley had me and Mike both on. Both on his show. He did a 5-hour show on the Fantasy Sports Network.
On Target Fantasy, yeah.
And it was fantastic. He had us both on for multiple hours throughout. Like
Mary Stream Kill, kind of a different variation of Mary Fuck Kill. We could say fuck since we're on our own show,
yeah, exactly.
But they can't on a national radio.
So. Michael Beller was really, really cool. But, I mean, you know, you already talked about Tim Heaney and Vlad, who I spent a lot of time talking with and were amazing people. So I'm going to say Clay Link of RotorWire was super,
he was
super cool.
Yeah.
He was awesome. We hung out a lot. Howard Bender, who I knew outside of this event already. Him and I shared a cab to the airport, but he was amazing. And Tristan Cockcroft, absolutely fantastic. But I've got to give the biggest shout-out to Laura Michaels of Masters Ball, who without his help and – you know, and encouragement and guidance, I wouldn't have had the balls to go up to the people and talk to a lot of these guys. And really, I mean, he really kind of just, hey, Justin, come talk to this guy. Hey, Justin, come meet this guy. You know, and was the reason, one of the main reasons we were doing the social media and another big thing that happened, that we're going to talk about next. So, let's jump right into that. And talk about the first drafts. And I think the biggest surprise of the head-to-head draft that was on Friday night was that I was in it.
What? Wait, you actually participated in Tau Wars?
Yeah, I was a Tau Wars participant this year. And so the background story to that was Stefania Bell, who is one of the participants, got sick and could not compete. And I was asked to fill in for her. I was called Thursday night, the night before
pretty
the
last
draft.
Second.
Pretty last second, yes. And asked to fill in, and you know, of course, I said yes, and I was ecstatic, and I ran around our apartment in Harlem screaming like a little girl.
Yeah, butt naked too, which made me immediately go to the room, shut the door. You know, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to run down the list of people. In this draft, Dr. Roto, Jake Seeley, Andrew Lamont, Michael Beller, Kyle L. Frank, me, and Stefania Bell, Paul Spohr, Clay Link, Peter Kreutzer, and then Jeff Manns, Howard Bender, and Vlad Sedler. This is a 12-team head-to-head by categories, but instead of strikeouts, it is K9. And then the rest, I believe, and it's OBP instead of average. So, you know, let's, before we get into my team, which we're going to pretty heavily, let's talk about the thing that everybody has been talking about, and that's Paul Spohr's team. Because Paul Spohr, well, actually, let's talk about the setup for this. So, we're at a the Tout Wars took place at a restaurant.
Rockin' Riley's. Hotel.
Which is
hotel with a restaurant in it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is also the location of the studios of the Fantasy Sports Network. You know, it's right next to the restaurant. So, like, you know, people in between drafts could go in and talk on the radio and things like that. And they had a serious table set up. So Friday night we get together, and it's pretty loud because the NCAA tournament's going on to the point where it is like it is pretty much impossible that we're going to be able to draft in that location. And it is hot as hell. I mean, they've got heat lamps on us. There's a ton of people. People are screaming at the top of their lungs. And so there was a lot of confusion. And they ended up moving us up to the seventh floor, a couple floors up, into a room. And Mike, would you like to describe what the room was like?
Yeah, they moved us to this conference room, and it's pretty much like hell, legitimately hell for Paul Spohr. Because if you don't know Paul Spohr, he's, you know, 180 pounds, soaking wet. He's 6'5", almost, really skinny guy, and he hates the cold. So as soon as we walk on this floor, it's no joke, and I'm not exaggerating here, probably 40 degrees in the room. And again, it's not an exaggeration. We were in the room the whole time. It was so bad. And, you know, I think that part of the reason Spohr did what he did in the draft was just because he wanted to get the hell out of there.
It was just... and that's why I had to tell the story of the background. Because, yeah. I mean, it legitimately felt like it was about 45 degrees in the room. And then the air conditioner that seemed to be running the entire time.
It was running. We were right under it. Eli and I were like directly under it.
The only way to get through the suffering was to just fall asleep and take a nap, which is what I did.
Which is what Eli did. He took a nap in the corner. Mind you, backstory for Eli is he was up for what, like 34 straight hours or something like that?
Yeah, so I feel like that. Yeah, exactly.
Now there was a legitimate breeze running through this 40-degree room. And Paul looked absolutely miserable.
He had mittens on.
Yeah, he had mittens on. I think he had, like, two sweatshirts on. I mean, he looked absolutely miserable. And then he just decided to take it out on the room. So Paul Spohr puts together the most starsiest and scrubbiest team in the history of fantasy baseball. He drafts, Joey Votto, Nolan Arenado, Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Chris Archer, Trevor Story.
Trevor Story.
Yeah.
Those are the big buys.
Yeah, those are all the big buys on one 12-team team, or 12-team league team. And then pretty much, you know, there's a couple other buys where you spent more than a dollar. Javier Baez for $5, Eric Thames for $5, Aledmys Diaz for $3, Michael Pineda for $9, and then it's $1 players.
Yeah, 14 of his players were $3 or less. But when you really look at the team as he constructed it, and not only did he buy these guys, he bought Trout at 50, Harper at 44, Nolan Arenado and Votto both went for 41 apiece. He did all this early. Like, this was in the first, yeah, probably, what, 20 minutes of the auction where he
Within 20 minutes of the auction, he had a total of $23 to spend or something like that. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. Eli, what do you think of his team, though?
He's actually the one who could have took a nap after those buys because he wasn't able to get it in any action for like a good 45 minutes after that. I like it. He was able to get some guys cheap with upside. Like Javier Baez certainly has more upside to make more than $5. Marcell Ozuna for one is incredible. Beltran for one is solid. I'm not a big Eric Thames guy, but he could outperform those $5 potentially. He got a couple $1 pitchers with some upside. Dylan Bundy, Fulton Evich, Lariano. So I think he did... an incredible job filling out the rest of his roster when I thought he pretty much had no chance to get anybody good. So it's going to be really interesting to see what he does. I think he's got a good chance to win this.
You know, I mean, we were talking about before. It's like, hey, how in depth do we want to go on these teams? Because we don't want to shit on anybody. And Paul's my buddy. Like, I mean, he's my boss over at Fangraphs. And I love the dude. But I think everybody is a little crazy and starstruck at this point in terms of looking at his team. His team has no chances as currently constructed.
Well, he could trade for pitching. He obviously needs pitching help. There's no doubt about that.
I disagree because it's a head-to-head league. Every single week, you can punt a category and be fine. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, exactly. So say he is punting wins, right? And which he obviously is at this point, but not necessarily. He still has some high upside relievers, but all of his guys have a good K per nine ratio. Francisco Liriano, Michael Pineda, Chris Archer, Ian Kennedy, Dylan Bundy, Mike Foltynewicz, his starters all have strong K per nines. Ivan Nova was a reserve round pick. And then he has a bunch of relievers that are Lima type guys. You know, Ryan Matson isn't a star or anything, but he got him for a buck. If he gets some saves, that's awesome. But if not, he still is going to help in the K per nine whip and ERA department. Same with Matt Bush, Pedro Strop, Joe Kelly, even Darren O'Day. So he filled his lineup with some $1 guys that are at the very least are going to give you some K per nine help and can at least, you know, scrounge up a couple wins in that scenario. The only problem that he has is that he's automatically punting saves each and every week, and that's okay in head-to-head categories because his offense should be able to be solid in every category
You're missing it. He's not just punting one category. He's punting like three or four categories. He built an amazing offense, and this is an issue, you know, and we'll talk about it when we get to my team here in a minute. This is an issue throughout the draft is they drafted too many starting pitchers. You know, they did not draft enough relievers because the K9 instead of the Ks really switches it over from it being what should be, you know, in most fantasy baseball leagues, you need strong starting pitching, do you really need strong relief pitching? Tell me who's going to steal bases on his team.
Ben Revere on the reserve. He's got a 30 stolen base guy in Trout, potentially. Trevor Story steals bases. So does Harper. Harper. But at the end of the day, with head-to-head categories.
I don't think Harper steals as many bases. I mean, Trevor Story hasn't stolen a ton of bases in the major leagues yet.
But head-to-head
it's a 12-team league. You can stream. I mean, there's going to always be guys that get steals on the waiver wire.
I do want to know this, though, Justin. Is there an innings limit each week, or do you have to hit a certain
innings?
It's yearly.
950 innings for the year.
Okay, so if we do a quick math, like 26 weeks in the season, that puts him at somewhere in the vicinity of what, like, I can't do that math off the top of my head. But anyways, like, he's going to have enough innings with the starters that he has.
He's going to have enough innings, but I think he punted, punted K9.
Stolen bases.
I think he punted, for the most part, stolen bases. I don't think he got enough stolen bases to compete on a week-to-week basis. And the thing about stolen bases is they come in bunches anyways. So,
Stolen bases and saves are his main things that he punted. Mm-hmm. He didn't punt K9 because he's got a ton of guys that... How do you figure? Michael Pineda, Chris Archer, Francisco Liriano, Ian Kennedy, Dylan Bundy, Mike Foltynewicz are solid K per nine guys.
You really have a hard time pronouncing that name, don't you? But also,
you keep getting worse every time you do it.
But he definitely punted ERA and WHIP.
But Justin, this is a 12-team league, and the things that he punted, steals and saves, are some of the easier things to find in leagues this shallow. So I think that Paul will be able to make up for some of the deficiencies. And apparently, you don't.
I think Paul's a great fantasy player, and I play on with him in a couple leagues. I wish I wasn't turning this league this team back over to Stefania Bell, so I would have a chance to play it out. But I think people are just so enamored by what he did, and I think what he did was brilliant. Because the guys he got for $1 or less than $5 or less were bargains. I mean, I hate Eric Thames, but Eric Thames at $5, like, there's nothing but upside. Javier Baez at $5, nothing but upside. Aledmys Diaz at $3, nothing but upside. He was able to manipulate the draft in a way that I don't think anybody thought he would be able to. And so I'm impressed by that. I just think everybody's a little bit starstruck because they're seeing Harper, Trout, Arenado, and Story and Votto on the same team. and I just don't, I don't think he balanced it as well as he could have.
I don't think he needed to balance it though.
And here's the thing too, is there weren't, this league did not trade a lot last year. Jake Seeley was telling me that there were a total of 3 trades made last year, and Jake made all of them.
How many of the people in this league this year were from the same group last year?
Well, 7 if you don't include Stefania.
All right, so it's somewhat of a new group there. Mm-hmm. Things might change a little bit.
So I'm sure if you're including for in-season management, it would be 8. I believe Clay Link was new. I believe Vlad was definitely new. Kyle, L. Frank was new. And I want to say Dr. Roto is new. So, but...
Right, let's talk about your team. We got
we spent a lot of time on calls.
All right, so I get the phone call... And you know, from Lore asked me if I want to participate and draft Stefania's team for me. I talked with Stefania via text message a little bit. She gave me a number of names to not draft. And you can, you know, her being an injury expert, they were a lot of the injury guys. She didn't want anything to do with David Price, and Michael Brantley and a couple of those guys. And then she gave me a couple names to target if they went cheaply. The only one I got off of that list is Ian Desmond. I'll just say my quick strat, what my strategy was that Mike and I developed kind of the night before, and then I'll let you guys ask me questions if you want. So my strategy was that because it's a K-9 league, I wanted to draft out of my 9 pitchers, I wanted either 5 to 6 relievers, and I wanted them to be all high K-9 guys. I wanted my starters to have, you know, at least decent K-9, if not high K-9. And unless I could get Kershaw, I wasn't paying $20 for a starting pitcher. I felt like looking at last year's league and draft, that starting pitching went way too expensive, and that relief pitching actually went way too cheap. And so that was my strategy. Obviously, I did not get Clayton Kershaw. I'll run down my team real quick, and then I'll throw it to you guys for questions. I have Jonathan Lucroy at $18 and Brian McCann at $4 as my catchers. Miguel Cabrera at $35, Todd Frazier at $15, Brandon Belt at $10, Jose Altuve at $33, Elvis Andrus at $5, Brandon Crawford at $3, Nelson Cruz at $28, Miguel Sano at $12, Ian Desmond at $11, Keon Broxton at $8, Carlos Gomez at $3, Max Kepler at $1, and then my pitching staff is Julio Teheran, Kevin Gausman, Danny Salazar, Lance McCullers, Brad Brock, Dellin Betanzas, Adam Ottavino, Cody Allen, who they have written as Chad Allen on the spreadsheet for some
good
reason.
Good job, Collette.
and Zach Britton. And then my reserve round picks were Carlos Rodon, Corey Dickerson, Jorge Soler, Koji Uehara, Tyler Skaggs, and Chris Carter.
So, Soler just announced is going to start the season on the DL, which is a bummer.
Yeah, that is a bummer. But then Stefania can DL him and pick someone else up.
Yeah, you lack outfield depth a little bit, so she's going to need to pick up an outfielder too.
Yeah, she is definitely going to. But there's still plenty of outfield depth on the waiver wire.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I'll start with a question.
Go ahead.
So, how much, if any, did it weigh on your mind as you were drafting that you were if you were worried about what Stefania would think about each individual buy as the draft was going on?
I mean, it didn't. I mean, that part, I'll be honest. I definitely wanted to try to get a couple of the guys that she had recommended. Unfortunately, the only one I was able to get was Ian Desmond because you know, David Dahl was another. So for those of you who are interested in David Dahl or Ian Desmond but are worried about the injury, Stefania Bell's not worried about the injury, so that should tell you something. And then she also wanted Wilson Ramos because she's not as worried about him coming when he comes back. She thinks he's going to be fine when he's back. But I ended up getting Brian McCann at such a cheap price, I felt I didn't need to go get the third catcher. But she told me, she said, listen, I trust you, and you decided to come out to Tout Wars just to be there. She goes, I trust in your decision-making process. So, and for the most part, Every single person that I talked to loved my team.
They were just being nice.
No, they totally were.
Yeah, this team is hot garbage. If she doesn't finish in last, it'll be America.
It's really a win-win situation for me because if I, you know, if she goes on to win the league, then I drafted the team she won. If she loses, I could just be like, well, I did the best I could for her, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You got a question, Eli? You want me to ask another one?
Go ahead and ask another one.
All right. I mean, I guess I'll ask the obvious question. What was your favorite buy for this team? And then also, what was your worst buy, in your opinion?
Oh, man, that's hard. But well, my worst buy, I'll go first. That's pretty easy. I was really pissed at myself for getting Brandon Belt. I mean, if you've listened to this podcast for the last year or two, you know that I've been a huge Brandon Belt detractor for a long time. It is an OBP league, so he gets a little added value. And what happened was he was going for $9, and I can't remember to who. And I looked at my projections and my price points, and I go, Brandon Belt's a $15 player in this league, even with my lower projections. And so I tried to price enforce, which is the one thing I said I wouldn't do. Well, actually, it's not the one thing I said I wouldn't do. It's the one thing I said I wouldn't do that I actually tried to stick with. And I got stuck with him. So, you know,
I'm sure Stefania's fine with that. She's a Giants fan. So.
Oh, she's a Giants fan. And I got him. I got Brandon Crawford. But it hurt because like the next player thrown was Eric Hosmer and he went for $10. And I mean, I'd rather have Eric Hosmer.
Wouldn't anybody?
Yeah.
I'm talking to you, Joseph Pizleski. Talking to you.
I mean, that happens in all auction drafts. It's all about when players get thrown out and how much you have at that time and what positions you need at that time. So I don't have a huge problem about the 10. I, like you said, I think it's a little bit of a bargain. Maybe not the exact guy you wanted, but...
I'll tell you, though, Justin, I'll tell you my favorite buys from your team is definitely Todd Frazier at 15. And when I went into the fantasy studio with Eli, actually, to do a segment or two with Joe Pizzapia, that was one of the guys that I mentioned to him. And the other one is Keon Broxton at 8, because at the end of the day, you look at some of the other outfielders that are a little bit kind of lower tier, and even like Yasiel Puig, he went for a couple dollars less, but Broxton has the legit opportunity, especially in an on-base percentage format, to go 20-30 with a decent OBP, and that's just at $8, that's amazing.
It's the OBP that really makes it for Broxton, because, I mean, you know, we look at him as a guy who strikes out too much. And when I was on the radio, we were talking about Keon Broxton and this buy specifically. And someone mentioned that he could go 20-30. And I jokingly said he could go 20-30-40, 40 being his strikeout,
the strikeout percentage.
At the price in an OBP league, I loved it. And what made it better was Jake Seeley really, really wanted him and only had $7.
Yeah, and I got to say, too, with your bullpen, which I think if you were drafting for you and not Stefania, I think you would have went more relief pitcher heavy.
Yeah.
You still got a good amount of relievers, but I think the Dellin Betances at $8, which I know Eli can agree with because he is a perennial lover of Dellin Betances. I just don't
think people look
at 3, and Britton even at 14, because he went for the same amount as Giles. And while Britton has had some injuries this spring, you can't really discount him especially based on what he's done the last few years, but Tansis should have went for upwards of $10 to $11 at least, based on the fact that it's K per nine. And if you're, as long as you don't worry about the saves aspect with him, I think that's amazing buy too. And overall, I think you did a really good job, and I'm not just saying that because you're my partner on the show and on the website, but I mean, we also stayed up until like 5 a.m. the night before, kind of trying to round out something that you could do. And I'm not trying to take any type of credit for what you did. I think it's just a really solid, well-rounded team. And not only am I saying that, but a lot of people are legitimately saying that about your squad.
Yeah, so, I love what you did with your pitching. Only two different teams spent less than you at pitcher, but you really did a good job. You got two fairly elite closers in Britton and Allen. You got strikeout machines in Betances. Your starting pitchers all get strikeouts. Tehran, Gausman, Salazar is a good buy for 7. He's got a lot of upside there for that price. McCullers, Brock's underrated. Ottavino's got a chance to get saves as well. I really like that. And yeah, Rodon, too. Rodon might start the year on the DL. He probably will, but that could end up paying off down the line, especially because you didn't spend any money on him whatsoever.
Yeah, worst case scenario. I mean, what happened was, right when we took the break for the reserve rounds, I went on Twitter and checked his Carlos Rodon's mentions and saw that his MRI had come back clean. So I was like, well, here, I'm going to take the gamble. I wish maybe I'd taken the gamble on Matt Harvey, because he also went in the reserve round of this draft to Vlad Sedler. And he looks fantastic coming back.
Wow, Sedler got Harvey and Richards in the reserve round.
Yeah,
that's kind of amazing.
All three guys were at the top of my list, Rodon. Yeah.
And Jay Bruce in an on-pace percentage league. I just think that's kind of crazy. But here's another question for you, Justin.
It's also a 12-team league. So.
Yeah, true.
Sure, I get it. Another question for you, Justin. So, looking just at the draft as a whole, is there any regrets you have in terms of players that you didn't price and force enough that, you just feel like you could have ended up acquiring but didn't because at the time in the auction you didn't have enough money, or you were kind of looking for somebody else, or overall are you kind of like my main thing is like Jonathan Lucroy. A lot of teams did not spend at catcher, and when you look at the $18 price tag for Lucroy, I like the player. There's nothing bad to say about him, and the price is fair. But when you look at some of the other like kind of catching duos, you have like Yasmani Grandal going for 14 with Sandy Leon. So somebody obviously went, Bender went, kind of star scrub there. But like the JT Realmuto went for 8, and he got Travis d'Orno as well for $2. Russell Martin and Zanino 8-1. Evan Gattis and Cameron Rube 7-1. Do you like kind of have any regrets about like how you built some of the positions on your team when you look at some of the other prices, or are you okay with it all?
I'm pretty much okay with it all. I mean, I know I spent more than a lot of people did. I mean, I spent as much as Clay Link did on Gary Sanchez with Jonathan Lucroy. But, I mean, for me, I have Lucroy above Gary Sanchez in my ranks and in my projections. Sure. So I don't have a problem with that. I mean, my original plan with that was to do the stars and scrubs. It was to do Jonathan Lucroy or Gary Sanchez or Buster Posey. I was in on all three of them. Lucroy was just the last one thrown out and went for the same price as Gary Sanchez. And then pair him with Wilson Ramos and then take a catcher in the reserve. And I price enforced on Brian McCann and got him at $4, and I was ecstatic with it.
Which is less than Wellington Castillo, Salvador Perez, mm-hmm. Evan Gattis, Russell Martin. I don't really understand that. I think you got a bargain there.
No, and I do too. And, would I maybe rather have had McCann and an $8 or $9 Russell Martin? Sure. Maybe that, gives me enough money, later on to spend on Lorenzo Cain, who I missed out on. In terms of other guys I didn't price enforce on, or I didn't go the extra dollar on that I really should have, Edwin Encarnacion sticks out.
He went to
$28 on that same to Michael Beller, and on Michael Beller's team as well is Lorenzo Cain, and I just didn't have the money. I only had $12, and he went 13 on him. And I didn't have the money, I had already bought Jose Altuve, and Logan Forsyth went for 7, and I just felt in an OBP league, in Los Angeles, that was just an amazing buy. I actually really, really like Michael Beller's team, overall. I mean, he has a lot of the guys, that I would love to have on my team that I just either couldn't afford or just came out at a part of the auction where I wasn't comfortable taking, I already had Miggy, and I just wasn't comfortable, taking two first basemen at high prices early on, in the auction. But I'm happy with my team. I feel like I put together a really balanced, good team that Stefania can now take to the take to a championship.
Mike, is there anything on Justin's team that concerns you? The only thing I see that bothers me, that what I mentioned before, is the outfield depth. There's not a lot of depth there, and there's also a lot of risk. I mean, Sano hasn't really done much in the majors. He's either been unproductive or hurt. Desmond's currently hurt. Broxton, shows flashes, but, we don't really know what he is yet. And Carlos Gomez is so up and down. It's a little, I don't know. I do like Kepler at 1, though. That was a good buy.
Yeah, I put Kepler in my util spot, so that way he can move up and take Ian Desmond's spot. For until Desmond is back. So
I like Corey Dickerson. I know I'm a Rays homer, but he's going to lead off. He's been pretty solid in terms of his plate skills this spring.
He's looked great.
I really like Dickerson. He's been looking really, really good. So I'm not going to sit here and say that he's going to be like one of the top 20 outfielders in this format, but I do think obviously he's going to have to use Dickerson at the beginning of the season with Jorge Soler being injured and such, but I think he has enough depth. It wouldn't hurt to get one more, but talking about you know, a position or any of these guys that kind of scare you, I don't really see anything glaring right now. I mean, if something happens to McCullers, then sure, you're going to need to, you know, or Stefania is going to have to do something to kind of mitigate that. But in general, I think it is very balanced and I have no issues with it. I do want to ask you this, Justin, since, you know, people listening, they all probably in some form or fashion, including myself, even in years past, would watch these tout drafts online and just kind of watch the spreadsheets fill up. And they would also listen to it on SiriusXM and everything. But what's the biggest difference for you participating in this live auction as opposed to watching it at home or doing an auction at home online where you're not seeing everybody? What's the biggest difference for you?
I mean, you know, I don't think you really get an idea of, one, the pace of how quickly it goes. And if you want an idea of how quickly it goes, you know, you can go to the Tout Wars Twitter page. And look at how quickly players are announced on the Twitter page, because that's how quickly they went in the auction. And that'll give you an idea. Like every minute, there's a new, every couple, you know, minute, 2 minutes, there's a new player being under. It moved fast. So, I mean, you have to make decisions very, very quickly. And I mean, the difference between this and a home league and stuff like that is, you know, and anyone who's got a home league, you know, there's always a sucker at the table. There really is. And here there wasn't. I mean, you know, maybe some people are a little bit more well known. I mean, this is a newer format, and so it's got some people who are a little bit less known in the industry or newer in the industry. But there was no discounts for the most part. Especially early on. I mean, the discounts came late as people filled up their rosters and things like that. You weren't like being able to take advantage of people. And it was something that I think Mike and I have been very well known to, you know, during Tout Wars, during Labor, tweet out like, oh man, hate this buy. Oh man, love this buy. And I did it this weekend too. You know, especially during the final NL auction. I tweeted out, you know, oh, love this buy, hate this buy. But man, like, you have a whole new respect for these guys being there and watching it, and then being in it. The one piece of advice, you know, I will give to people who are in the industry, want to go to something like Tout Wars or be in something like Tout Wars, whatever you do, do not let Vlad Sedler in your league. Because
he's a shark. He's a shark.
No, not only is he a shark, he's a sniper.
Yeah.
That dude would wait every time. Like, every time I thought I was getting a player, you know, blah, 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 going once, blah, 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 going twice. And Vlad would just, like, $1 more, $1 more. Paul Goldschmidt, Marcus Simeon, Ryan Braun, Paxton, Robbie Ray. I mean, Kimbrel was another one. He was not only just smart and drafted a pretty good, strong team. He crushed your hopes and dreams in the last minute. And I shook my fist at him more than once throughout the draft.
I'll say this, just watching the drafts and tweeting out the picks and doing the Facebook Lives and everything, of all four of the auctions that took place over the weekend, I think that the head-to-head auction had the most engagement between the owners the drafts.
It was by far, and I didn't get to see a ton of the mixed auction.
Yeah, because we were both in the radio for a while.
We were recording for a while during the mixed auction, and so we kind of missed out on a bit of that. So I don't know. But, you know, Jeff Erickson, who was the auctioneer for that one, I believe, he moves pretty quick. So I don't think there was necessarily a ton of BSing. This one was fun. This was like a home league. There was shit talk. There were people making jokes and having fun. This was a lot of fun. Todd Zola, who was the auctioneer in ours, did a fantastic job kind of, you know, keeping it all moving. But it was a fantastic draft. And I got to sit next to Andrea Lamont. She gave me gummy bears mid-draft.
She was probably hoping that she could spike your sugar and end up getting you out of there.
No, and she didn't even say anything. She just, like, opened up a pack, she looked at me, and just dumped them out right in front of me.
Like, because who doesn't want gummy bears? Who's going to pass it up?
Like
not for me.
She doesn't know if I have diabetes. I'm a big dude. Like, you know, she just dropped them right in front of me. And then she went back to drinking her martini. So
yeah. All right, let's pick winners. Let's pick winners outside of Justin because
outside of me, Eli, who do you think just from the draft? Obviously, a 12-team league. There's going to be a lot of turnover in terms of rosters and things like that. But who do you think won the draft, Eli?
Why don't you come back to me? Let me look this over one last time.
All right, Mike first. Who do you think won the draft?
I think a couple teams are in really good spots, but I'm going to go with either Jake Seeley or Vlad Sedler. I think that they both put together really solid, balanced teams that could compete. Obviously, they could lose too. But I think if I had to choose one, I would go Vlad just because I know how brilliant he is and what he can do. And I really liked what he did in the reserve. His reserve round was, to me, I think it was the biggest win for him was just the reserve round itself, especially all the news we're getting on Harvey. I think that he ended up kind of crushing that area. But I'm going to go with Vlad and Seeley.
All right, Eli, you got your pick?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Mike. I think those are the two in contention. I think what Mike said, what Sedler did in the reserve round puts him over the top for me over Jake.
Yeah, to me, I agree with you guys. I think they both have very strong teams, and I like their teams. But to me, I'm going to go different. I'm going to go with two guys that I think have one put together a really amazing offense, I felt, and the other put together a really amazing pitching staff. And so I'll start with Michael Beller, who put together an amazing offense of E5, Chris Bryant, Logan Forsythe, Correa, Cargo. He took the discount on JD Martinez, Puig, Lorenzo Cain. And then his pitching staff, I mean, is no joke either. It's Sale, Carrasco, Hendricks, Duffy. I just worry if he doesn't have enough K9 and enough relief pitching on his team. But then Peter Kreutzer pretty much did what I wanted to do, which was get Clayton Kershaw, get another one or two high strikeout starters, and then fill in with a ton of high strikeout, high upside relief pitching. Clayton Kershaw, Steven Strasburg, Rich Hill. You know, enough innings for him to get over the hump in the innings limit. And then Carter Capps, Grant Dayton, Kyle Berglaw, Sean Doolittle, and Sean Kelly. I think Peter really understood the format more than a lot of other teams did. And I think that's why he will probably have one of the strongest teams.
The thing about Peter is I think you're right that he will have a strong team, but in general, I don't think the offense will give him enough to win this.
He's got no power on his team.
I think he just punted power.
Well, I mean, that's not just punting homers, it's punting RBIs, too.
Power is easy to find in a 12-team league.
Yeah,
He's got a ton of speed and a ton of
open. We talked, and this is nothing against Peter because he's an awesome guy, and he was nothing short of the best to us as a podcast and as a site coming there and everything. We talked about it the night before, Justin, about Trey Turner and who you would throw out first. You actually got the opportunity to throw out the first player in the draft, which is pretty cool. But yeah, we talked about that. You should throw Turner out. And that's the thing is like he ended up spending 32 on Turner when you ended up getting Altuve for 33. Then he got McCutchen for 28. When you can look over at other guys that like Charlie Blackman at 29, Jose Bautista at 16. I just, even Nelson Cruz went for the same price as McCutchen. That's, to me, like, those are two automatic overbuys offense.
Well, and McCutchen going the same price as Nelson Cruz was partly auction dynamics.
Sure.
That Cruz went much later in the auction. And McCutchen went when people were really trying to spend. Because a lot of teams went stars and scrubs.
And that's the thing, too, as somebody that always watches over these auctions and I tweet about them and this, that, or the other, my biggest thing that I won't do moving forward is start saying, oh, I like this buy. Oh, I don't like this buy. It's going to be more about looking at the dynamic of the auction itself and where people bought certain guys. Because at the beginning, obviously, people are trying to throw out money and everything. But really, where you can find certain values, like Jose Bautista is, if not my favorite buy, one of the best buys of the draft for me, just based on where he was taken, because it was still fairly early in the auction and he was kind of glossed over a bit to me. Like, that was, you have to kind of locate and pick and choose where you can see some of these values, you know, kind of manifest themselves throughout the auction itself, as opposed to just looking through everybody's roster and be like, oh, I don't like this price. When you look at your own, you know, projections and spreadsheet, like, oh, my, mine had 23 and this guy got him at 30, you know, I hate this buy. You know, it's not as simple as doing that when you actually see the process and how the auction moves. There is a ton of ebbs and flows to it. So,
and a final thing on this one, and we'll move on to the AL auction next. Is this, if I get invited back, anyone listening, you know, if, you know, Ron Chandler or Jeff Erickson or Laura Michaels or Peter Kreutzer are listening to this podcast, I promise if I get invited back next year for this auction, I will Abedini it. Because that was my original thought has always been for this format. If I ever get in it, I'm going to do a Abedini. But I felt like I couldn't do that to Stefania Bell.
Sure.
And big thanks to her for entrusting me with her team. All right, let's move on to the AL draft. And we're not going to go in depth like we just did. You know, we went in depth with the head-to-head one because I was in it. We're just going to kind of do, you know, quick thoughts. So, Mike, what is your main takeaway and favorite team?
It's going to be hard for me to have because all these drafts, we were at all of them and there's just so much going on. It's really hard to completely digest everything in one sitting. I will say the first takeaway is I think that the AL has kind of the most star-studded group a bit of people that are actually drafting in this. Larry Schechter is obviously in the Hall of Fame of fantasy baseball players. The guy, you know, came out with a book of winning fantasy baseball, and he's very, very precise in his projections. He doesn't really deviate from his auction values itself. So it's really cool to watch him and, you know, watch him draft live in person and see his process and stuff. He was really, really, you know, just disciplined and had the ability to kind of wave off certain players when he was kind of done and stuff. But it's kind of hard for me to just take away one guy. You know, I like Podhorzer's team, and I like what he did there. I don't agree with taking Price at $13, David Price at $13, but I understand the reasoning. I think that he just is, you know, hopefully he's hoping that David Price comes back and is okay. But you'll have to get back to me on a winner, because I'll have to kind of look through the prices and, you know, who I think did well and everything. But in general, you had guys like, you know, Larry Schechter in here. You had Patrick Dravitt from Baseball HQ, Jason Collette, Jeff Erickson, Colton Wolfman, Mike Podhorzer, Lore Michaels was in here. It was just a lot of guys that, and Chris Liss as well, who have been just giants in this industry, and they're all competing in one AL only. So that was kind of a massive takeaway initially, is just these guys are all gathered around one table trying to fight for all these players. And it was kind of the most intense of all the drafts, because all of them didn't really speak a lot. They were all really engaged in the prices and the auction itself, and didn't have a lot of like banter back and forth. It was like really strictly business with these guys.
Yeah, I mean, this was probably, it seemed to be the most serious of the drafts that went on. Eli, what are your thoughts? You got a takeaway and then maybe your favorite team?
Yeah, I don't really have a favorite team. I guess when you go to all four drafts and you cover them and tweet about them, and it's hard not, they all run together. I can't remember. The only thing I can remember is loving Brett Sayer's team in the mix auction? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the AL, no one really stood out. Like Mike said, this really great group of competitors. I'm sure there's going to be a tight race. There's probably going to be a bunch of teams in the mix. I like what Lauren Michaels did with his pitching, but I don't know if his offense is going to be good enough. So no team really stands out all around. I do like the Podhorse's team as well.
All right. Well, I guess I will pick a team. And I, you know, I mean, there's some teams I really love their offense. Some teams I really love, I really love their pitching staff. Like Jason Collette, I mean, I love his offense. You know, Hanley, Valencia at 11, Gurriel at 8 in OBP, Altuve, Dickerson, Reddick, Cruz. And I do love certain aspects of his pitching staff, but I wonder if he's going to have enough strikeouts to compete. So, you know, I think I'm going to go with Chris Liss.
I was just about to say that. I'm looking at it again. I think Chris Liss.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Liss, you know, Verlander, Gausman, Keuchel, McCullers, Ian Kennedy, Tillman, and, you know, Cam Bedrosian as a closer. He just needs to make sure Bedrosian actually closes. Otherwise, he's virtually punting saves because he didn't even grab any, you know, potential closers on in the reserve. I think, you know, his offense with Miggy and Dozier and Correa, Raul Mondesi Jr. Locked up the second base job for the Royals today. Mazzara, Brandon Moss. I mean, I even hate Brantley, but at $8, you know, it's worth the gamble.
I do worry about his catching. He's going to get an absolute zilcho from his catchers.
But, I mean, Chancisco is one injury away from being up.
Sure, so, sure.
You know, I mean, you know, he could be the kind of guy that, you know, something happens to Wellington Castillo or Tommy, or not Tommy Joseph, Caleb Joseph, and he's on the way to the major leagues. All right, Mike,
I'll highlight a couple. I don't like to punt catchers, so I'll say that right off the bat. So looking through these teams, you know, if you completely punted and went like 1-1 for your guys or 2-1, something like that. So Collette and Liss in particular, I can't say you're going to win because the punting catcher is one of the worst strategies to do because it automatically gives you, they basically are automatic negatives to your team. And when you go into the season automatically negative substantially, it's kind of a tough sell. I will say Liss did a little bit better job because Cisco will probably get a good amount of playing time, but Navarez and Chirinos for Colette's side, I can't see them getting meaningful. They might get combined between the two of them, like 300 at bats. And that's not being crazy. So I kind of look for people that already kind of spent on the position itself. And one of the guys is Seth Trackman. He bought Brian McCann team and Salvador Perez. He also is kind of relying on Yoan Moncada. He bought him for $10, but if Moncada comes up sort of early, then he could obviously earn that $10. I don't love all of it. I certainly don't think Malik Smith at $5 is worthy of that because, me as a Rays fan, I just don't think Smith comes up and does anything meaningful.
He also paired him with Colby Rasmus.
He did, which I just saw. So I kind of like that combo there. But I'll go with Trackman. I'll highlight him as a guy that certainly has a possibility of winning this thing. I like what Larry Schechter did. I think that he did pretty well in terms of valuing his players and not going over on anybody. So I like what Schechter and obviously Seth Trackman did. And I'll also highlight Patrick Davitt, even though he has holes at multiple spots, he does well in terms of grabbing guys off waiver wires and such, and is a very smart individual.
Mike, if it wasn't for you, he wouldn't have been able to draft at all.
What do you mean? Yeah. Patrick Davitt, a little side story, comes up to me before the AL auction starts.
Like a minute before the draft.
Yeah, literally a minute before the draft. And he's like, does anybody have a mouse? And he has a Canadian accent. So he's like, does anybody have a mouse, that I can use? And
it's an awful impression.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I'm sorry. I apologize to everybody that just heard that. But yeah, I happen to have a mouse with me because I also am 90 years old and can't use a laptop just with my finger. And he used it. And, you know, obviously he had a really good draft because of that. But yeah, I'm going to go with Trackman and Schechter as two guys that, you know, that you need to watch at least.
All right, let's move over to the mixed. Eli, you mentioned really liking Brett Sayre's team, so tell us why.
Yeah, I just think he did the best overall job. I think he got a great offense starting with Correa, Corey Seager, Mookie Betts, Kyle Schwarber, George Springer, Odubel Herrera. And he also got some cheap guys, Puig for $3 and Shinshu 2 for $2 in an OBP league is kind of incredible. I really like that. Decent catcher combination in Gattis and D'Arnaud. You got Strasburg. I love that he got two closers for cheap, Rodney for $5 and Bedrosian for $4. Some high upside guys for cheap and Rodon for $1, John Gray for $4, Harvey for $3. I really like his team.
Mike, any thoughts or a team you really like in the mixed?
Brett Hershey, and a little side story about Hershey as well. Justin, you waved me over to introduce me to him, who, again, I've never met any of these individuals, so I had no idea. And Brett Hershey, by the way, is the guy that signs my checks at Baseball HQ. So, you know, I should probably know what he looks like. But I walked over and I was like, oh, hey, who are you? You know, and he's like, oh, I'm Brett Hershey. And it was super awkward because obviously I should probably know who he is. But I think he did a really good job in this draft. He, you know, bought guys that I have a lot of love for this season. You can obviously pick and choose a few of the buys that you like or don't like based on, you know, dollar values and such. But in general, I like a lot of what he did. Obviously, he uses a lot of the baseball HQ projections. So that's kind of part of it as well. But yeah, I like Hershey's team a lot. I do really like Sayers' team. He, you know, obviously found value in a lot of different spots. I hate his love for George Springer and Kyle Schwarber. If you swap those two out for two different guys, he spent, you know, over $50 on Schwarber and Springer combined. If you swap those out for two other options, then I probably would like it a little bit more. But he's a really, really good draft guy and somebody that really knows how to do auctions well. So I think Sayre, Hershey, and also you can never count out Fred Zinke. He has pieces on this team, but I guarantee you if you look at it at the end of the season, it's not going to look anything like it.
Yeah. But, and I was going to mention him because I really like some of the pieces. I mean, he got Bumgarner and Yu Darvish to headline his rotation, then Marco Estrada for $4, J.A. Happ for $2, and then just some wild cards in pitching to kind of make up for the early expensive prices of Bumgarner and Darvish. But his offense, I mean, Tommy Joseph, Josh Donaldson, and Arenado. Which I love. I loved him getting both. Then Harper and Bryant. I mean, he did a lot of what Paul Spohr did. But I think he has a more complete team.
No, I disagree. I think Spohr did better with...
Spohr's in a 12-team league as opposed to a 15.
Yeah, that's true. I know.
So...
I don't know. I don't like his pitching. I think he, instead of spending 23 on Darvish, he should have bought like three guys for like 8 each or something and tried to spread out.
I'll say what the one takeaway from this draft, the head-to-head, and the AL only, is that the industry as a whole is on Darvish. Darvish will not be cheap if you haven't had your drafts. I mean, we'll get to the AL, or we already did the AL only, but Darvish went, I want to say, for like $28.
He went for 28, and when you look at some of the other options, you have Kluber go for 29, Chris Sale went for 27, which Eli mentioned this also in the first in your draft, Justin. You know, Sale is getting underdrafted a little bit by a few dollars, and it's kind of crazy. I mean, at first I was like, well, that's pretty fair for Sale, but as the pitching prices kind of came around, as Thunder goes down behind me, it seems like Sale is starting to be more of like an 8-10 starter, or maybe 7-10 rank in starting pitching, as opposed to being like a legitimate top five guy. And that kind of presents a buying opportunity here, because I think the industry as a whole is a little worried about the move. And I agree with Eli. There's no reason to be that way. That's probably the bigger opportunity. But in this draft in particular, Darvish went higher than Sale by $1. Justin Verlander went $4 less than Darvish. And I think we can all agree that Verlander is certainly safer in that respect, but I agree. Yeah, he's going for more than he might, than he probably should. Darvish went for the same amount as Kluber in your draft, Justin, the head-to-head. And then when you look at some other options, Sale, like I already mentioned, was 25. Scherzer only went for $4 more at 30. Strasburg went for $2 less at 24. Obviously, there's risk in that. But Johnny Cueto has no business being under Darvish, in my opinion. He is as stable as it comes. He went for $1 or a couple dollars less than Darvish in your draft as well, Justin. So I agree. As much as I love Darvish, I can't do that.
I mean, I don't have a problem with that necessarily, but I just, him being so close in price to the really the elite tier. Like, he has no business going for $1 less than Kluber in AL only. Like, there is there's a huge difference there. I mean, I don't have a problem with people taking Cueto over Darvish over Cueto or Cueto over Darvish. I think they're right next to each other, at least in terms of my ranks and valuations. Before we move on to the NL and wrap this up, I just want to mention one of my favorite teams. I like Sayre's team as well. It was very good. I actually liked Hershey's team also, and Zinke's. But my favorite team is Tim Heaney's team, our good buddy Tim Heaney.
Great guy.
I mean, Syndergaard, Arrieta, Carrasco, Felix, $1 Dylan Bundy, $1 Adam Ottavino, $1 Finnegan, and then even in his reserves, I love some of his reserve picks, Chris Carter in the reserve, Matt Strom in the reserve, Matt Duffy in the reserve, Luke Weaver in the reserve, Jordan Zimmerman in the reserve. I mean, I think he put together a much more balanced team than I think a lot of people did. And even with his $1 players, his $1 players have some upside. I mean, CJ Cron, Tom Murphy, and Jacoby Ellsbury, all at a dollar, I think were kind of steals. So I really like Tim Heaney's team. He's who I would pick to win.
I love Luke Weaver, and I think the fact that he's not going to start the season in the rotation really helps his value, because if we knew for a fact he would, then I think that he would start rising up draft boards and up in auction values. But the fact that he's not going to start the year and is probably still going to end up with like 140 major league innings, really quality major league innings at that, it really helps him out.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go ahead and we'll finish up with the NL. Mike, any particular team you – or actually, Eli, any particular team you really like?
No team really stands out totally. I think Hurts – I think maybe I like what Hurts did the best. I do worry about his pitching a little bit, but his outfield is pretty sick with Billy Hamilton, Yoenis Cespedes, Jock Peterson, Chris Bryant. He's also got Freddie Freeman, Brandon Crawford. It's a pretty good offense he's got going there. The pitching is not as deep. Tyone, Maeda, Mats, Gio, that's decent. He doesn't really have an established closer, so that could be a problem, but – I think he's got a pretty good team overall.
Mike.
This was an interesting draft, I'll say that. Mm-hmm. And not just because we had lunch with some of these guys afterwards, but I really like what Gianella did. He moved over Daniel Murphy. And at the beginning of this draft, first base was on just a absolute monster run. So Except for Anthony Rizzo. Anthony Rizzo kind of slipped through the cracks, went for 32, when you had other first basemen like Freddie Freeman go for 39. Goldschmidt went for 40, which in hindsight was an amazing buy based on that. And then Joey Votto also went for 40. Will Myers went for 31, but he wasn't taken early. Overall, though, there was just a really strong first-based run at the beginning of the draft, and then Gianella kind of slipped under the cracks there, got Daniel Murphy for 25, mm-hmm. and moved him over to first base, which I thought was a pretty brilliant move. Then grabbed Neil Walker for 16, pretty solid. He has a really balanced team. He obviously knows what he's doing, has a really balanced approach in there. He got himself some really nice high upside relievers. Joaquin Benoit, maybe not, but in general, he got two mainstays in Familia and Watson at $10 and $11. I like that a lot. I really like what Cockcroft did, especially at the end of the draft. I think that he did just a brilliant job in getting guys like Hector Neris for $3. I thought that he got Ottavino. Apparently not, based on the sheet. Oh, yeah, he did. So he got Adam Ottavino for $3, which I really liked. I like Ivan Nova, who I thought would go up boards as we got closer and closer to the season starting. He just really hasn't. $9 in an NL only is brilliant. But, another couple guys to highlight, Ray Albright just kind of went for it, and I really appreciate what he did there.
I absolutely love Gray Albright's team. I really
yeah,
do.
And he's great at the draft table, too. Just a really charismatic guy. Just a really fun guy to watch draft and probably to participate against in these auctions. So he really went for it, and I really appreciate that. And I also want to highlight kind of Craig Mish's starting pitching. Mm-hmm. I don't really care about Brett Anderson at $3. I wouldn't mind getting him for $1.
I love Brett Anderson at $3.
I really love Garrett Cole. I love DeGrom. I love Julio Urias. I love Robert Gesellman. He also got guys like Brad Ziegler, Carter Cass, Cota Glover. I don't really care much for Drew Storen, but I think that that's a really balanced starting pitching approach. The rest of his offense outside of Gregory Polanco and Joey Votto, I could kind of do without. But in general, I think he did some really nice things here. Again, these guys are all experts. They know what they're doing. There's highs and lows to every person's team. But if I had to bet on some guys that might be there at the very end, I think Gray Albright, Tristan Cockcroft, and Mike Gianella are probably going to be at the forefront.
Yeah, for me, I love Cockcroft's team probably the most. I mean, Bryce Harper, 39. Cesar Hernandez at 14, Adam Eaton at 21, Matt Carpenter, Orlando Arcia. I mean, he put together a really, really nice offense, and then also put together a really, Scherzer at 29, I felt he got like a nice little discount there, and then, kind of stacked the rest. I liked his late gambles in pitching on, Daniel Hudson and Anthony Descalfani. If for some reason, Ottavino's not the closer, he's just going to be searching for saves the whole year.
What was really funny at the very beginning of the draft was kind of Derek Carty. This is just really humorous. He throws out Kershaw. I think he threw him out for, 40 or 30 to start off with, or whatever.
He started at 39, yeah.
and just in a really humorous moment was just pretty much begging everybody to not keep bidding on him. He ended up going for 45, which isn't outlandish. It's obviously not what you want, but in general, I thought it was
almost
pretty funny.
I mean, Zola almost got him at 44. Derek Jeter finally just, you know, he pulled
up the
last dollar.
To start the draft, Zola threw out the first player, and it was Kettle Marte for, I think it was $6, and it just froze the room.
No, you threw him out at three, and someone went for it. He got him at five.
Okay. Well, it says on here six, but regardless, it was pretty funny that Kettle Marte was the first guy that got thrown out.
Yeah, I don't know if that price is right, but maybe he threw him at four and got him at six. I want to mention Todd Zola and his team real quick. Because, to be honest, throughout the entire auction, I was hating his team. Absolutely hating his team. But I have never seen someone work an end game of an auction. So I thought there was no way that he was going to be able to spend all his money, that he was going to have a complete team. And I don't necessarily know if it's a winning team, but the precision in which he finished his team was amazing, and I love some of the late buys, especially. Lucas Duda, he got it at 12. Johnny Peralta at 7. Eichhoff at 12. Brandon Finnegan at 4. He really showed why he is the defending champion with the way he finished that team.
It was really balanced. It wasn't guys that you're sitting there like, oh, wow, that's a massive splash in the market. But, you know, guys like Hellickson, guys like Davies going for $9, Eichhoff, Michael Lorenzen for $1 was great. You know, Finnegan for $4, Raisel Iglesias for $9. I mean, he got guys that were unspectacular, but at the end of the day, they're going to accrue, again, at-bats and innings are currency, especially in NL-only, AL-only formats, and that's exactly what he did. He just grabbed guys that he knew were going to give him some type of value, and that's really important, especially, you know, I'm one person that loves to grab prospects, especially in a format like this. I would rather, you know, use a reserve round pick on somebody like Austin Meadows rather than get a guy that's going to never play this season like Tommy La Stella, get like very minimal at bats. So I completely agree with that. But there's also something to be said for somebody that's going to spend just a little bit higher, you know, in the mid range of like $5, $6, $7, $8, $9 on players that are 100% are going to play all season and might not give you the best skills, but are going to give you something. And that's meaningful.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is going to wrap up our Tout Wars coverage. Eli, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB, and you can check out the Survivor podcast if you're into that sort of thing.
Yep. We just released that the most recent episode. We got another one coming up this Friday after we watch this Wednesday, so definitely check that out. Mike, where can you reach? What are you working on?
Can't say again how awesome it was to go through the experience, to meet you guys. I really do mean that. It was awesome to just spend some time with y'all, even though we were pretty much working the entire time and getting lost through subways. And, you know, Eli and I had a nice adventure going home on Saturday night as well. It was great all around. But again, I wouldn't trade this experience for anything in the world. It was absolutely amazing to go through it and everything. Reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Check out the Prospect Show with me, Matt Thompson, and Andy Anderson, who was also there. Big thanks to him. Check out the main show with me, you, Justin, and then Matt on Mondays. And then we also have me doing the Baseball HQ Daily Matchups column this year. Make sure you check that out.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsfantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my stuff on Fangraphs or friendsfantasybenefits.com. I should be doing an article probably for both on Tout Wars, coming up pretty quickly. So definitely go check that out. Give us a rate and review. It really helps us out, especially if it's the 5-star variety. We're getting a lot of attention now, and things are really starting to pick up for us. But the reviews definitely drive a lot of our traffic, so definitely help us out there. All right, for Mike, Eli, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.